Ron Van Dam. He doesn't need this gig. He's got all that money coming from that deposed Nigerian prince. Should be here any day now, and then he's kissing you suckers goodbye. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, look at you.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Look at you wearing your fancy pants. Thank you so much for coming. Sit down, be quiet, and I'll do a show for you. I will perform for you in various aspects of entertainment. It's going to be incredible. For my first trick, I'll be sawing a woman in half. Vertically. Yeah, lengthwise. That's going to be different. Now I'm going to do a card trick for you. Pick a card, any card. No, not that one. Not that one. Okay, yeah, that one. Good. Show it to yourself. Nobody else. Put it back in the deck. No, not there. No, not there. Right there. Okay, let's see. I'm going to shuffle the cards. Is this your card? No? Oh. Now I'm going to do my pantomime routine for you. It's internationally acclaimed as being one of the finest pantomime routines ever in the world. Okay, I'm going to make believe that I'm stuck in a box and I'm putting my hands up all over the place. This is radio, so I have to explain. I'm putting my hands up all over the place as if I'm stuck in a box and it looks like I can't get out. Of course, there's no box there, but with my hands, I'm making it look like there is a box, right? Yeah, right? Now I'm going to pull on a rope. The rope doesn't exist. You don't see a rope. I'm making believe I have a rope and that there's something heavy on the other end, like a grand piano or something. So I'm pulling as hard as I can. And look, nothing's really happening. I can't really pull on the rope. But it looks like there's something at the other end. But there's nothing. There's no rope. It's just me doing stupid stuff. Now, as my final part of my pantomime act, I'm going to make believe I'm walking upstairs. Of course, I'm not walking upstairs. I'm just staying in place. But I'm moving my feet to give the impression I'm walking upstairs. Now I'm going to switch it up. Oh, boy, I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to make it look like I'm going downstairs. I can't go downstairs. There is no downstairs. I'm standing on a floor. I can't go downstairs. But it looks like I'm going downstairs, doesn't it? And there's my pantomime routine. Ooh, I'm exhausted. I have not entertained like this in a long time. But apparently I've still got it. You know where this show is going? Yeah. Pretty much. All right. That's okay. Okay. Thanks for being here, man. You know, without you, well, I'd still be doing it, so never mind. I do want to do a shout out. Hey! I just did a shout out to some people that make this show possible. First, there's a lovely and talented Jason Shaw who does the background music, the opening theme, closing theme for the program. Thank you, Jason. Then there's John Shanahan, comedy writer. He has his own podcast called Hypnagogue. You can go to that. You'll find a link to that. The bottom of all the stuff you see on the New England Broadcasting page on your computer thing, your electronic piece of crap. And then there's Nicole Reed, who books many of the national interviews that we do on the program. And also, she is that British voice that you hear at the beginning of the program as well. Does her talent ever end? Yes. But it doesn't seem like it. And then there's me. I just stopped by to pick up my laundry. That's all. I did that in New York. Yeah, I sent my laundry out. Oh, I was big stuff in New York. Sent my laundry out. Ron, how do you know you've made it in the world? I sent my laundry out. Oh, you do, huh? Yes, I do. Whoa, you've made it. Yes, I have with my laundry. Lord. Two wars going on in the world, and I'm doing this. Makes no sense. Awful, just awful. Anyway, let's move on. You know, you've got to laugh, you got to smile, you got to continue with your life, and that's what we're going to do, and here we are. Okay. My God, what do we have in common? I know. Allergies. You too, right? Yeah, you too. Isn't that a band? Isn't that a musical? I think so. Is it U2 or is that part of, that's on the bingo, that's a bingo thing, isn't it? I'm not sure. I'm playing stupid, so you appear smarter than me. Not the case, but I'm making it seem like that. Anyway, when I was a kid and when I was a young adult, I remember those things. I had allergies, and when there was pollen, remember pollen? Pollen, I remember that. Remember pollen? Used to be that green stuff, and when it was around, my nose would stuff up, and my eyes would tear, that kind of thing. And then you'd take a tissue or a napkin or your sleeve, and you would relieve it in that way. Now, and the other people that I talk to, and there aren't that many, believe me, the other people that I talk to all have the same thing that I have, and that's allergies all year round. And when you say to somebody, oh, you have allergies, what are you allergic to? Their response is, I don't know, everything, I guess. It doesn't have to be just pollen. I think I'm allergic to people. I really do. I think that's developed over the years. That's why it's worse now, and I have allergies every day when I wake up. It's the anticipation of having to deal with other people, and I think I have a reaction to that, and the reaction is through my dripping and itchy eyes. And then when I talk to other people, and again, that doesn't happen frequently, they tell me they have allergies all the time too, but they don't know what they are from. And I say, it's people, it's you're just like me. When you have the concept of other people living on the planet and invading your head, you get allergic too, don't you? They say, oh, Ron, you're right, I am allergic to people. Yes, it's a trend, and it's actually true. Is it a psychological allergy? No, I don't psychologically have my nose run. It's amazing how the body produces certain things on a regular basis. My body produces sometimes some phlegm. Sometimes it's in the mood to do the phlegm. I will have phlegm, but I cannot spell it. Phlegm doesn't begin with an F. I don't know. I think that's the nature of phlegm. It's just annoying in every way, including in its spelling. Then sometimes I will have gas, and I don't know where it comes from. I think it's from my appetite of eating food. Sometimes I'll get gas when I drink water. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. And I think the reason I have gas is that there are other people. I think that people give me gas. It's not the food necessarily, it's the people. When there's people around me, I tend to have more gas. And I think that's a psychological, physical reaction to the fact that there are too many damn people around me. Even when there's no people around me, the concept that they could be is enough to give me gas. And allergy symptoms. It's true. You know, you laugh, and you're probably not actually, but if you are laughing, it's not funny, okay? It's just not funny anymore. It's not funny. All right. You know, Ron, why are you talking about bodily functions? Because we all have them. That's why. I like to talk about things on this show that we all go through, but we don't really talk about them because either they're embarrassing or they're so insignificant and ridiculous. But someone's got to bring them up, and that's my job. That's what I get paid for. I get paid by the Bring It Up Agency of North America. They send me a check to bring things up that other people don't talk about, and to do it in a sarcastic, annoying manner. That's what I get paid to do. And as a result of being paid to do this, it allows me to buy food, which in turn gives me gas. Do you understand? Do you understand? Yeah. It's the circle of life. It is. I'll tell you a funny story that isn't really very funny, which is pretty much my trademark. When I was about, I'd say 22 years old, I had a job at a furniture company in New York City in Manhattan called The Workbench. And they had expanded into other areas in the Northeast and into California. They sold furniture. And it was my job. I was the domestic purchasing manager. Big title for the guy that gets on the phone and orders the furniture from Sweden. Yeah, I had to call Sweden all the time and order furniture. That's where the furniture came from. And they actually imported it into this country, and we then sold it under the Workbench company name. Anyway, I was a domestic purchasing manager. I still don't know what that means, but that's what my title was. So one day, the owner of the company, he said, let's all go out to dinner to a French restaurant. It was me, I was the domestic purchasing manager, and then there was the regular purchasing manager who called Sweden every day. I just called Sweden sometimes. Also, a lot of furniture came from North and South Carolina. I don't know why, but I dealt with them a lot. This is information that you don't need to know. Anyway, we all went out to a French restaurant. There were about 20 of us. We pretty much took over the whole restaurant. Because in New York, some of the restaurants aren't all that big. They don't seat more than 20 people. It was a French restaurant, and that was the first time that I had frog's legs, which was a disgusting situation because every time I thought of eating frog's legs, I always thought there's some frogs like in wheelchairs. I've actually put some frogs in wheelchairs, and I didn't even know if they made wheelchairs for frogs, but in my mind they did. And the frog's legs were not worth eating. They were small little things. Everything tastes like chicken, especially the frog's legs. And it was loaded with garlic. Oh my God, there was so much garlic. You could not see the frog's legs through the garlic. But this is a French restaurant for you. They put garlic in everything. Why? Because, and I'm not being derogatory. When a cuisine has really not some great food involved, they either overspice it so you can't tell what you're eating, or they add so much garlic that you can't tell what you're eating. This was the French way of doing it at the time. So I'm eating the frog's legs, tons of garlic, and it was just awful. It was just awful. I mean, too much garlic is like, God, what are you doing to me? The next day I woke up, I had more gas than I had ever had in my life. And I didn't have a lot before that, but then I had a lot. And I've had it ever since, from that one meal decades and decades ago. I don't know if that affects everybody the same way, but I'll tell you one thing, and one thing is for sure. I've just wasted 15 minutes of your time. Yeah, I have. I've taken away 15 minutes of your life right now. Talking about stupid stuff like me eating garlic, about the fact that I have allergies because people make me allergic to them, which is, I think, true. But all that stuff, which has no bearing on anything at all. I even talked about me getting paid. This is so funny. Me getting paid in order to bring up things that we all go through, which is absolutely absurd. I even threw that in. And now 15 minutes into this program, which is halfway through the show, I've wasted a lot of your time. But you know what? I've taken your brain away from all the crap that's going on around you. And don't argue with me. There's a lot of crap going on around you. My father told me a few things when I was growing up. One of the things, he didn't say a lot to me. He was like Confucius. He said things that kind of made no sense at the time that when I got older, all of a sudden, almost now they're making sense. It's amazing how fathers do that. I've tried to do that. I don't even know if I'm doing it. You don't know you're doing it. When you just impart this wisdom and then, it's like telling a joke and nobody laughs. And then like the next day they think of the joke and they laugh. Oh, that was funny what he said yesterday. I'm just getting it now. That's exactly what, when fathers say things of any seemingly importance, you slough it off like, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's too old. And then when you get older, the stuff he said makes incredible sense all of a sudden. Wow, he was a soothsayer. How did that happen? It's almost like a trigger thing. Like, I'll tell him something now, but it won't make any sense for about 20 or 30 years. And then, boom, it'll make so much sense. It'll be incredible and I'll have a legacy. That's what it's like. So one thing he told me was, this was incredible. He said, don't get nervous or too concerned or anxious about things that you have no control over, because it's futile. And when I was younger, I said, no, I have control over everything, Dad. So that's a bunch of bullshit. And then like decades later, it's like, you're right. Why should I sweat my brain and my focus on things I can't do anything about? That came to the realization there are things that go on in the world and in one's life. You got no control over it. No matter how much you think you do, you don't. And all these people that stand up in front of crowds, all these entrepreneurs and, you know, motivational speakers, you have total control of your life. Everything that happens in your life is totally under your control. It's not true. It sounds good on paper or coming out of a person's mouth, but it's not true. There are certain aspects of your life you have no freaking control over. And you know why? Because you're not the only person on the planet. Oh, surprise. Other people with greater influence than you can do anything anytime they want, and that can influence you, and you can't do a damn thing about it. And that's what my father said, and it turned out to be true. Doesn't mean you can't have a fruitful, wonderful life. It's just that don't waste your time sweating over the oldies, you know? Don't waste your time sweating over stuff you can't do anything about. Just concentrate on the stuff that you can do stuff about, make yourself a better person, the world around you a better place to live in, and all that kind of crap. But, you know, seriously, don't sweat that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's true. I have an interesting guest coming up rather soon. We're going to talk about bullying today. Yeah. Oh, God. I've done a lot of shows on this topic through my many years of not sweating the stuff you're not in control of. And bullying is something I do not tolerate. I was not bullied in school because I was 6 foot 3 inches tall when I was in high school, so no one picked on me. So that was nice. But I did see a lot of bullying going on in school, and it was just like, wow, this is like social assault and battery here. I mean, how can kids get away with punching other kids in the arm and teasing them and pushing them down and threatening them and making their life a living hell? These kids should be removed, these bullies, and placed into some penal system. God. The poor people that they pick on, they live their entire lives from those incidents in school when they're a child. It follows them the rest of their life. Bullies that's like the worst thing you can do to a child, to bully a child, to make them feel slighted and assaulted upon. It's just a horrible psychological situation. And I don't understand why schools don't do something more proactive about that. And this phrase, they're just kids being kids. That's not right. They're not kids being kids. They are hurting other people for a lifetime. And it must be stopped. Schools do not do enough about that at all. Domestic violence, we have places that they can go, counselors they can speak to in order to end that. It's horrible. This is the same thing. Bullying in school is domestic violence. It is. There's no other way around it. And it must be stopped. So I like to bring in experts every once in a while when I have the opportunity to do so. Dr. Yalda Uhl joins us now, and she is a PhD child psychologist, author, and founder of the Center of Scholars and Storytellers at UCLA. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ron.
We're talking about something called the Choose Kindness Project. Sounds good. What exactly is the project?
So it's a project to combat the issue of bullying and mental health in our country. Mm-hmm. We brought together an alliance of the nation's leading organizations that have resources and work to do research and provide tools for people who want to prevent bullying, who want to promote a culture of intentional inclusion, mm-hmm. and ultimately want to support young people in their mental health and well-being.
Which kind of should be everybody, right?
Really should be.
I mean, it should be, yeah.
Should be.
I know. You know, when I was growing up, bullying was a horrible thing, and it affects you for the rest of your life. I don't care what anybody says, it just does. And then
it really does.
And then social media came along and said, well, we're going to make it even worse. We're going to bully on social media now and not even show you our faces. And the stories of the results are like basically fatal in many cases, if not destructive. It seems to have gotten a little bit worse than it has better over the years. Am I accurate there?
Yeah. I mean, I think also we see, you know, in our political realm and all sorts of different places, people bullying each other. Adults are not modeling a culture of kindness.
No.
And young people are exposed to the news, and they have more information than they ever have had before in their lives.
Yeah.
And as you said, when we were younger, bullying could stay on the schoolyard. It didn't follow us home. The thing that happens now is usually the child will know the bully. They've probably met the bully in person somewhere, you know, at school, at church, in a sports place. And then that bully will stalk them on social media. So it's 24/7. It's very public. Everyone can hear about it. And that means the effects are worse.
Okay. I'm going to say something political for a quick second, and you don't have to respond. It's shameful that that goes on the highest levels of presidency when that is actually exercised, condoned, and displayed in front of everybody, especially children. Okay, that's all I want to say. Okay.
I agree.
All right. Okay. Oh, we didn't have to do that, but good. Okay. All right. The responsibility, it seems to be on the schools when we talked about school bullying. Is that done by town, by jurisdiction, or is it a national situation?
Well, I mean, our school system in the U.S., there really isn't any federal laws for schools. It's usually done by states or state standards. And as you said, when social media came along and all of a sudden there's this, you know, sort of no geographically bound place to legislate, schools didn't know what to do. So they had to figure out, like, what's their responsibility and what's the responsibility of the person at home. And the reality is schools can't do it all, and parents should work with the schools and not treat them as their enemy, treat them as an ally, and treat their child with openness and that they have, you have your child's back, and you're not going to make it worse. Because the problem is, a lot of adults go into want to save my child mode,
yes,
and, you know, attack mode,
yes,
and that is not going to help the child. And what they end up doing is they threaten to take away the phone. A child will never talk to you again because they'll be worried you're going to take away their phone. Or the child won't tell you because they think you're going to escalate it, and you're going to tell the teacher, you're going to call the friend's parents who's the person who's bullying you. You want to keep your child talking to you, and it's really important to listen.
You know, with the onslaught of cameras everywhere, you would think that this bullying would take place on camera, and to the parent that said, my child doesn't do that stuff, and then, okay, look, I mean, you figure that revelations would start occurring, but I haven't heard a lot of that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's, you know, everybody is guilty of sometime in their life being unkind. What actually counts as a bullying behavior is if it's repeated over and over again, and then there's an imbalance of power. So if one kid's super popular and the other kid isn't, or one kid's, you know, on the student council or a teacher, a parent can bully kids too. And they see, you know, how, you know, when my kids were in sports, I would see some parents, you know, coaches that were pretty bad, and they were modeling bullying, you know, to other kids and their own kid and to other parents.
I know. I think the rules of assault should be in place for young children as well. Maybe not when they're 5 or 6, but when they're old enough to do harm, like teenage years. That, to me, that's assault. It's assault and battery, and it's punishable as it would be an adult. That's the way I feel, but apparently not the case. Some people are.
Well, I mean, the thing you have to remember is
adolescence.
Actually, science has found now that adolescence extends from ages 10 to 25.
Oh, so no.
During those years, I know, my kids are in that window and I can see it.
No.
You know, their brains aren't fully developed till they're 25. And if you treat them like they're an adult and that they have as much control over their actions as an adult should have, the science just doesn't back that. So treating a child with compassion and understanding, even a child who is a bully, we have a playbook for that. We have a playbook for children that are bullies, because often a child who is bullied either is seeing it at home, you know, something's going on at home, or there's something really miserable in their life and they're acting out.
Yeah, there's a reason for everything, but it doesn't make it right. And we're not saying that it is, but it doesn't make it excusable. And I know 40-year-olds who haven't developed yet either, a lot of them.
Yes, exactly.
Right. But, all right, so the good news is that this is being approached by the Choose Kindness Project, and they do come up with a parent playbook and educator and coach tips and guidelines. And I think people actually need that, because it's been discussed, but we've never seen anything that was definitively, here's what some of your resolves can be.
Exactly. So, I mean, there are resources out there. All of these organizations have resources.
Mm-hmm.
But what we did is we put them together in one place, in one book. You can download it. You can read it online. You can print it out. It's not very long, and it gives you actionable items as a parent of a kid who's been bullied, as a parent of a kid who is a bully, or as a parent where bullying hasn't even hit your household, but you're like, I want to teach my kid to be kind. There's all these resources there, all in one place, all free.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we have to do this in order to counter what is visibly in front of children and adults every day, and
It does. It's true.
Yeah.
You have to actively work to help your child choose kindness.
Yeah.
Our culture is not really reflecting that. And
no.
But the good news is, if you actively work on it, if you reflect it yourself, if you're being kind and showing your child what kindness is, you know, maybe pointing out when they see someone who's not kind and pointing out the ramifications of that, because sometimes seeing negative behavior, if it's used as a teaching moment, can teach, then your child has a much better shot of growing up and being kind themselves.
Yeah. Just very quickly.
Especially important for men, by the way, because men have it modeled at a much lower rate.
Yes.
So we believe having men show compassion and vulnerability, it's critical.
Right. Yeah. Well, men think they're not supposed to show compassion, again, such as what society is telling us now. But no, it's the opposite.
It is the opposite.
And children should somehow be able to go to their parents and say, I've got a problem here with bullying. I'm being bullied, because I know a lot of kids that were, and they didn't tell their parents because it's embarrassing.
Well, and it's not even that, it might be because it's embarrassing, but also they're really scared their parents are going to embarrass them, that their parents are going to call up their best. Yes, totally. They think their parents are going to make it worse.
Worse, yes, exactly. You're right. You're right.
Make it worse, or take their phones away.
You're right.
And I know, I'm a parent. Mm-hmm. I took my kids' phones away. That's mm-hmm. where you want to do. But if you do that, that's their lifeline to their friends.
That's
all they care about. Yeah, it is punishment.
Then they're being punished.
And they're being bullied. So, like, you're making it worse.
Wow. I need this handbook, and we all do.
Good.
And how can we get it?
You go to the website, thechoosekindnessproject.org, and it's free to download, and you can search for resources. And these are the latest, up-to-the-minute, amazing resources, all free.
Great. Dr. Yelda, you've been great. I appreciate your time today, and thanks for that information.
Thank you so much. I hope your listeners will download it.
I hope so, too. Thank you. Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. I swear it'll be better than today's show. Although our guest was fantastic, but everything that preceded the guest was a little bit ridiculous. Let's face it. I mean, I'm being honest about it. Why not you? Make this a wonderful day, because you're in control of that. And until tomorrow, I wish you peace.